Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast.
Dr. Lee, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Chris. Are you okay?
Yes, absolutely super, mate. Absolutely super. And we have to say thank you, don't we, to Prometheus Beard for hooking us up.
Yeah, we do, yeah. He's been saying he's gonna try and get me on for a while. So
yes, brilliant. Well, Lee, as you're probably aware, I'm all for a chat about health. As I said to you earlier, you know, I have quite sort of not fixed ideas, but I have very strong ideas in this arena, simply because I know how much it's done for me as a 54-year-old that hasn't been sick for 24 years and can run 1,000 miles nonstop, bar sleeping at the side of the road. Yeah, I know what peak health has done in my life. So thank you for coming on and having a chat. And we're going to focus, amongst other things, on ultra processed food. So should we start by delineating what's the difference between processed food and ultra processed food?
Yeah, so there's a classification system which would come about around 2013, 2014, depending on where you read it, by Dr. Carlos Monteiro from Brazil in Sao Paulo. He came up with a classification system called the NOVA classification system, which basically groups food into 4 different categories. The first category is minimally processed. So that's basically all food that we eat today has an element of process, whether it's an orchard and delivered to a supermarket. But things like vegetables, meats, fish, they're all one classification, one minimally processed. Then we have the ingredients, so like your salt. So these are things that have been altered over through a physical process. So like you get a rock salt or a piece of rock salt and you grind it down and table salt. NOVA classification 3 is your processed foods. And that's usually a combination of NOVA 1 and NOVA 2. So things like syrup, so say fruit in a can with a syrup sauce or something within the can, that's minimally processed. So they are processed, but they're not ultra processed. Then your classification 4 is your ultra processed foods. And these, the definition for this is quite a long and wordy definition, but the easiest way to remember is it's foods that contain ingredients that you wouldn't reasonably have in your kitchen at home and that you couldn't put together. And they often come with a long list of ingredients. They're rather handily wrapped in plastic for you. They last a lot longer than they should last, and they're generally quite nasty to the body. So that's an overview of your classification system.
And what, let's go back. So you're a doctor. Yeah. Do you want to just, so friends at home know, give us a little brief bit about yourself and how, Lee, did why did this pique your interest?
So coming into medicine for me is, I've come through a quite different route than most people who arrive in medicine. I was born in 1970s. I'm giving my age away slightly there. I was born in 1978. In Liverpool, quite a working class area of Liverpool through the Thatcher years, through Thatcher's managed decline of Liverpool. And I grew up in quite a tough environment, quite a poor working class environment. And my way of dealing with things really was through fitness. I was quite spirited, I would say. And my school headmaster pulled my mum and dad in, and he asked, his idea was to send me to boxing to try and work a bit of aggression out. So I was sent to boxing when I was about 7, and that kind of sparked me interest in fitness for the rest of my life. I was boxing for several years till early teens, and then I started running. I was running for Liverpool Harriers. I used to run.
You were a good boxer, mate.
I was okay. I was all right boxing, yeah.
I can tell by looking at your nose.
It's not flat.
It's a lot better than... is a lot better than mine.
I tended to avoid as many punches as I could.
God, This was one night in Bangkok, mate. That was a night to remember, I tell you. Bloody hell.
I've seen the videos of what are your stories you've told.
Yeah, I've looked. Well, which I should explain to you and our audience. Friends, I'm looking over here because I've got another screen up that I'm using to show you some of the stuff that Lee's talking about. But yes, back to you, Lee. Sorry, mate, didn't mean to interrupt you. Well, I sort of did because, you know, that's what I do.
No problem at all. So basically I was introduced to fitness from quite a young age and to health. So I was always kind of quite keen to look after myself and to eat the right foods. I was quite aware of good foods. And I think we were then, though, wasn't we? Because I think it was in the 70s and 80s, we didn't have like the ultra-processed food. So I think I grew up on a more traditional kind of diet of like potatoes and meat and vegetables. And I think if you look at that diet, it was a much better diet than what we have today now in terms of processed. It was a lot fresher. We tended to shop more locally and the produce was more local, so it didn't need to be preserved. So I think it was better quality anyway than what we have now. So I think growing up in that era alone, we had an advantage over some of the kids who are coming.
Yeah, but, remember? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, your nan had a shopping basket. I'll say your nan. We used to stay with our nan at weekends and we'd do the shop with her. And you went into the, you know, greengrocer and you got your fruit and veg. And you went into the fishmonger if you wanted fish. You went into the butcher for your meat. Of course, they're all gone now, aren't they? You know, for the most part, they're all gone. Yes, crazy times.
Yeah, it was a lot better. It was a lot better for the diet. And that's why we never had the level of obesity that we tend to have now. And so I think just getting back to that, yeah, that's what sparked my interest. And then I joined the forces. I left school 16. So I left school with no qualifications. I wasn't a good pupil. I went back to boxing when I was about 13, 14, started training again and was fighting again. I was just messing around on the streets. I wasn't interested in education. I barely went to school. And then I left school, started the YTS in Plaston, and that's when I decided to join the forces. My granddad was a Marine, my great-granddad was a Marine, so they basically advised me to join the Marines. And I went to see my granddad one day. I'd been in a bit of trouble. I was in a street altercation.
And you say, granddad, why are you wearing women's clothes?
Did I say that? Did you say?
I just said, you said, granddad, why are you dressed in women's clothes?
Proper Marine. Yeah.
Sorry, Lee, I keep interrupting you.
So I went to see my granddad and I'd been in a bit of trouble and I shit you not, he pulled out a Royal Marine recruitment video that he just had waiting for me. He must have been waiting for years for me to come to him and I asked for advice and he gave me that advice. So I went down the recruitment office, done my tests and stuff, got asked to go to the Marines basically. And then in the meantime, I'd gone away and I'd come back. And when I went to meet the Marine guy, he hadn't turned up and I started speaking to the RAF regiment. Well, it was RAF fella actually. And he basically told me that the RAF had a better boxing team. I'd never do anything. I'd just literally be in the boxing gym all day. I'd never have to. So I bought it. Was completely sold a lie, obviously, as you know. I never boxed for the regiment at all. I was basically never even joined the team. We never even had one. I don't think on one squadron. So I was a bit conned, but I ended up in the regiment. Did the minimum time that I could get away with, really. But during, I was in Bosnia for 8 months. I was in Northern Ireland. Lived in Germany for a couple of years. And I think just that time matured me enough to be able to get my head together, give me the discipline I needed to go forward in life, basically, and give me that kind of focus that I needed. Because I'd always been quite focused, but it was usually on the wrong thing. And I met my wife coming out of the forces, and then that was when I started my journey. Then I went back in and back into education and started off from scratch again. But I think I already had that ground and I already had that life experience. I already had that kind of fitness, kind of knowledge, the education on eating well and eating a good diet. And I think that's given me a different a different outlook on life and medicine in general than what most doctors have, to be honest. I think I'm a lot more open-minded to ideas, to alternative ideas. My nickname's Dr. Magnesium because when I worked in Liverpool Heart and Chest, I was in cardiothoracics. Rather than giving medication for arrhythmias of the heart, I'd always start off with giving IV magnesium. So I'd give a big bolus of magnesium first to see if that kind of realigned the muscles of the heart and to see if we could kind of get the heart back into rhythm with a natural salt, because we give magnesium sulfate rather than giving medication. So I think I've always been quite open to a different way of thinking, really. And I do think that's down to my background.
Yeah. Did it affect you at all then in your life? Is this sort of something that you found yourself getting into processed foods and the adverse effects that go with it?
So it was strange, really, because I knew I had a good understanding about food, and I thought I had a good understanding of metabolism, I thought, through medical school, when I was in medical school. And I kind of thought I knew it all, really. And I think I had that kind of arrogance of most people who have got a high level of education, where they fall into the trap of thinking, you know, well, I kind of know that I've been taught that, so I know that. And I think I didn't know it, though. I was surprised when I started looking into ultra-processed foods as a quite senior doctor as well. I'd been a doctor for 8 to 10 years at this point. I'd lived a life of fitness. My wife was a chef. She's got a background in health promotion and health education. So it was her that kind of put me onto it. She opened my eyes a little bit, and when she started looking into ultra-processed foods, she got a job working for a company that were trying to remove ultra-processed foods from a council in Wales. So she started looking into it a couple of years ago, and she was quite early into the research, really. And she put me onto it. And then when she put me onto it, it made me realise I didn't know anything whatsoever. It's like we were talking about what you were saying about the pH, what you live by, and things like that. We're not taught anything like that in medical school, and we're not encouraged to look into alternative kind of therapies and different ways of looking at self-health, really. So I had quite a poor understanding of it. When I looked through, I don't know whether you've seen any of the videos where I've said about the diet that I used to eat, and I thought that was a healthy diet. And when I look back to it, I was just putting on weight year on year on year. And no matter what I was doing, training, because I've always kept myself fit, I've always done quite a lot of fitness, not to your level, so I've definitely tried to keep my eye in. And but I was just putting on weight, and I couldn't understand why I was putting on weight. And it was like every 10 years, I've worked it out roughly, every 10 years since I was 18, I'd put on a stone. So if I carried on going the way I was going, I was looking at being 16, 17 stone in my 60s, and I'm 5'7". And that was just, I was looking at it and thinking, I'm going to be a prime candidate for having a heart attack in my 60s, the way I'm going, if I don't do something about it. So that's when I really got into the looking more into the ultra-processed foods and removing them from my diet. And I virtually eat none out from my diet. And I've had a 20 kilogram weight loss overall, managed to keep it off. As you say, you were saying about you. Sorry, go on.
That's brilliant. I mean, you mentioned, you know, I'm just in love with discovering what my body can do. What everyone's body can do should they decide. And I mean, when I ran the marathon de Sables in the summer, I mentioned it, you know, I ran across the Sahara in 52 degrees heat, up to two marathons a day. Two marathons in 52 degrees. It's pretty ninja, right? But like before I went, Lee, you know, there's so much stuff you can do that doesn't involve running to prepare yourself. First off, meditation, obviously, visualizing your goal, what you're going to set out to do, how you're going to complete it, and what it's going to be like to finish. But secondly, I lost stone and a half in weight in probably between a week and 10 days. And that's nothing silly. No, you know, I won't make myself throw up or anything. That's just intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Thirdly, I hit the sauna, and I was sauna as hot as, you know, I could for as long as I could stand it, doing stand-ups, you know, up on a box in the sauna. I joined the the local tanning salon. Just, I would never recommend this, but I wanted my body already to be protected against the sun. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to be worrying about sun cream and all this. I mean, I use factor 15 in 52 degrees. Everyone else was like white with all this zinc, you know, all this sunblock stuff. I was fine with factor 15. Anyway, I just love it, Lee, that I'm 54 years old and I've got the body, still got almost identically the body I had when I was 19. And I think people would want that, you know. I think most people would probably aspire, would love to have that. And all I'm here to say, like you are, is make a few tweaks in your life. It's there for everyone. I'm just a thick ex-Marine. I'm nothing special about me. I just decided I didn't want to listen to other people in this world. I was going to, you know, cut my own path because the other path ended me up in chronic addiction. So, yes. Sorry, I went off on one a bit there, but I love it. You know, when you talk about losing weight through changing your diet, this should be what they broadcast on the television, this kind of conversation, not, McDonald's adverts and that sort of stuff. So ultra processed food, I think we've covered that. So something, a great example would be a pot noodle, wouldn't it?
Well, for me, the easiest example I find for ultra processed food for people to get their head around is yogurt, because I found low fat yogurt the most shocking for me, because obviously everybody knows a pot noodle's crap, don't they? And people think, oh yeah, that's crap. But people think things like diet yogurts and low fat yogurts are good. Hmm. And if you look at the classification system that the government uses with these traffic lights, they're all green. So people don't have the education. They're looking at them and thinking, they haven't got the food education, because they're being given misinformation by the government, because they're picking up a yogurt and they're looking, it's got all green traffic lights system on it. So they think that's healthy. But if you look at that yogurt, so if you look at a yogurt, for example, they'll take the dairy products, they'll turn it into a yogurt. They'll have a lovely natural product full of sugars, natural sugars, full of proteins, full of good fats. And they remove all the goodness out of the yogurt. They'll freeze dry that, process it, and they'll sell that off in whey protein, stuff like that. No, that doesn't come from yogurt, but stuff like that, they'll sell it off in different sorts of processed food. Then they're left with this gloop, a watery, tasteless gloop. So what they do, they add emulsifiers in it, thickeners, to give it a good mouthfeel. So you feel like you're eating a creamy yogurt. They add stabilizers in, false sugars, carcinogenic chemicals, and they pump it full of crap. And then they sell it as a premium health product. Mm. And then the government go along with it. They put their traffic light system on it. And this is sold to us as a healthy alternative to eating a natural yogurt. And it's things like that I like to use as examples.
You just used another great one. I just showed a picture of it, whey protein. They add protein to it to make it sound like it's something good. Whey is the toxic byproduct of the cheese industry, hence curds and whey. It's so toxic that they can't put it in landfill because it would leach out into the rivers and poison, you know, all the wildlife. So what they do is they recycle it into the human food chain, and they sell it to people under the guise of protein or bulking agents, like you just say, for things like yogurts. You know, if you get like these cappuccino drinks in sachets and hot chocolates and desserts, all this, if you have a look at the ingredients, whey is quite often used just to bulk stuff out. And you've got all these youngsters doing their bodybuilding, thinking they're being healthy and they're going to put muscle on, and no, what they're doing is they're being used as pigs, really. Like, you know, like the way that you feed stuff that humans won't eat, you feed it to the pigs. That's what they're doing. So yeah, good example. And always Sorry. Makes me chuckle when they use dairy as any example of what human beings should eat. But that's probably,
well, I agree with you, actually, because weirdly enough, I was only talking to my wife about this recently, about the fact that it's a product to feed another animal's baby. And because I've been looking, since I've started this journey into ultra-processed food, I've started basically saying exactly what you've just said then. I've started to love the journey, and I've started to look at more things that I'd never considered looking at, like vegan diets, and we're using heavy amounts of pulses and beans and stuff like that. And I've looked into a lot of that recently. I've started looking into it, and then I was looking at the dairy industry, and I've never questioned, this is something that you never question, why are we drinking milk that's basically produced by an animal for its offspring? That's not meant to be part of our diet. We shouldn't be eating that.
I know, it's mental what people will just do because they were taught in school that that's what you should do. And yes, Lee, can we come on and talk about the addiction then? Because you've highlighted that this way of eating can actually not just be incredibly unhealthy physically for the body, but also mentally, mentally not good.
Yeah, so there's a lot of research at the moment about pleasure centers within the brain being stimulated by ultra-processed food. So these companies have spent billions on, first thing is the packaging. So you're looking at the packaging and it's stimulating your brain to start the digestive system straight away to make you feel hungry just by looking at the packages, because they spend billions and billions of pounds over 50, 60 years with psychologists and experts in manipulation in order to get you to choose their product. So you straight away, you're being brainwashed before you even pick up a bag from the shelf. Then they stick things into like high sugar contents. They put way too much sugar in, so they balance it out with salt. Yeah, they put chemicals in which stimulate the hypothalamus into feeling good. So it's a pleasurable feeling. Particularly things like diet drink are particularly bad for this. The zero drinks, they have chemicals in which stimulate serotonin release from the brain, which make you feel good about yourself. So you're drinking this drink and it's forming pathways, pleasure pathways. So it's making you want to drink it more. And that's why when you see these larger people in America and stuff like that, they're always drinking zero drinks, always. They never drink, because what it does then, you get the stimulation of the pleasure pathways and you get a release of insulin because your body thinks you're taking sugars. But when the insulin comes around your body, it can't find any sugar to bind with on the receptors and drive it into the cells to produce energy. So what it does then, it starts to make you crave sugar because you haven't got the sugar. So it's things like you're getting the pleasure stimulation, but then you're getting the craving for sugar. So you've got people drinking these diet drinks, thinking I'm doing the right thing again, because if you look at the diet drinks, they're all green on the traffic light system. So they're drinking them thinking, yeah, I'm doing a good thing. I'm going to lose weight because I'm taking the healthy choice. But all they're doing is becoming addicted to these drinks, causing cancer, because we all know the chemicals in them cause cancer. They know it's admitted widely. These companies are even coming out and saying they can cause cancer, which is bizarre. The people, and they're getting bigger. They're wearing the insulin out, so they're becoming diabetic. They're eating loads of sugar because they're craving sugar, because the body is telling them they need sugar because they've got insulin. So on so many different levels, it's affecting you before you even start eating the food, really. It's crazy.
And it just going to sound a stupid question, but I'm just going to ask it so we can all learn. What's the link then between ultra-processed food and obesity?
So ultra-processed food causes obesity in a few different ways. So it causes obesity by what we've just been saying there. So it can cause a metabolic syndrome. So a metabolic syndrome is a disturbance of the pathway that regulates your normal hormonal balance. So things like it causes diabetes, thyroid dysfunction. So it messes up, it messes up the regulation of your normal bodily function, your normal metabolism. But then it starts to act on the hypothalamus. It causes release of insulin, so it causes diabetes, which then feeds into the metabolic syndrome. It causes inflammation in the gut. So you have receptors in the gut that tell you when you're full. So if you eat ultra-processed food, the direct toxic effect of the chemicals in the food can irritate the bowel itself. So they cause inflammation of the cells within the bowel, the inner layer of the bowel. This then causes a chronic inflammatory response, similar to like COPD in smokers or in people who are in a dusty environment, where they get a chronic inflammation within the lungs. It then becomes a fixed inflammation and it's not reversible. So if you're eating this food constantly day in, day out, you're causing a chronic inflammation in the bowel. It kills off the good bacteria within the bowel because it's toxic to the good bacteria. Then you get colonized with bad bacteria. They start to metabolize and eat the sugars within the gut itself. Then they put out a toxic product, which then adds to the inflammation itself. So the whole bowel becomes inflamed. And this is why we have such high rates of inflammatory bowel disease at the moment over the last 20 years, which correlates perfectly with ultra-processed food. Wherever you look in the world, the levels of bowel cancers, the level of inflammatory bowel disease correlates perfectly with the consumption of foods. So you've got this inflammation. Then the inflammation squeezes on the receptors in the bowel itself. So these receptors send a message up to the brain to say, I'm full. So when your bowel's stretched, that normally means your bowel's full of food. So you don't need any more food. So your body sends a signal up to the brain, says, turn off our hormones now when we're full, so we don't need food. But because you get inflammation at the local level, these receptors are squashed. So they can't send that message up to the brain to tell the brain to switch off the hunger receptor, the hunger drive. So it makes you more hungry. So even though you've got this big inflamed bowel and you're eating higher levels of fat, higher levels of sugar, which is bigger, and you're also continuing to feel hungry. So I think there's been studies done, big Italian studies a few years ago, where they put two groups of people in an RCT, so a randomized control trial. So they split them into two groups. They lived in a hotel, tables, and they had ultra-processed food on one table, up to 70 or 80% ultra-processed food, and regular food with about 20 to 30% ultra-processed on the other table. And they said to them, you can all eat whatever you want. There's no regulation. Eat whatever you want, but you 50 eat off that table. Halfway through, they switched them over, and they said the same. And they found out that just through choice, there was no advertisement, no packaging to drive that kind of increase in hunger. They were eating 500 calories more on the table of ultra-processed food because the ultra-processed food itself is driving. So you eat more calories as well. It's everything. It's the perfect storm, really, that they've come up with.
And, of course, we touched on earlier, didn't we, when we chatted before, if you're taking an abundance of carbohydrate, you're spiking your glycemic index, glucose, high levels of glucose. And as we know from sugar, it's highly corrosive in the body. So turning you into acid, folks.
What a lot of people don't know about this sugar as well as it being acidic, it's rough. It's a rough molecule as well. So if you've got loads of sugar around in your bloodstream, it's a sharp, jagged molecule. So in the smaller blood vessels, so like in your feet and your eyes and your kidneys, and now, interestingly enough, it's coming out more and more about the heart and the brain as well. So if you have high levels of sugar in the diet, you're more likely to be diabetic, because not only because of the fact that there's all the risk factors associated with high levels of sugar and diabetes and on the brain as well, but also just the fact that you're destroying them small blood vessels within the brain. So you get vascular dementias as well. So just eating high levels of sugar, you're getting the acidity, as you've just mentioned, you're getting the damage to the blood vessels as well. So you're getting ischemic damage. So you're getting dementias. We've got like a massive rise. And then heart disease, like microvascular heart disease. So now we're getting a lot of people who are coming in with chronic chest pain because the small blood vessels in the heart are destroyed from these molecules, basically. So they're constantly living with pain. So there's a lot more. It's a massive topic as well, really.
Yes. I'm glad you brought up the dementia link. People got no clue in that area what's going on. So, Lee, we've talked about the problematic side of it. What are we suggesting for our friends at home then that are listening? Because we've got a double thing going on here. This kind of eating this way, you could call it sort of comfort eating, but comfort eating for a whole nation, really, introduced to us during sort of, well, when we're really young. So we've got an addiction to move on from, and then we've got to settle on a healthy eating plan. So how do people make that transition, and what would you recommend they do?
So I've mentioned my wife before in this conversation that we're having, and what she's really into is educating. I know you're really into the pH, but what we're into is just whole, just eating healthy whole foods, nothing added into it, just natural food, as organic as you can, and eating it from as early age as you can. So she's doing a big movement in schools. This is her thing. We're trying to get into junior school, primary school, and to try and basically change from within, which is, I think it's a thankless task. And I think with the amount of funding from these companies and the amount of direct lobbying that they do to MPs, I think the chance of changing policy directly, there's a lot of push on that at the minute. There's, I think, Chris Van Tulloch and Spector, Tim Spector, have just had a debate in the House of Commons about trying to change it. But as you know, as conversations we had earlier on, the level of corruption within the government and the level of funding and direct lobbying from the food industry, the same as the alcohol industry and the tobacco industry as well, farms, the amount of lobbying, it's going to be different to change it from within. So I think the best way to do it is just education. People like yourself, people like me, just getting the word out. Even to some extent, people like Chris Van Tulloch, and I know probably he differs a lot from yourself and your own opinions. But on this subject, on ultra-processed foods, I think just even if he gives you wrong information some of the time, just getting some of the right information out so people can make their own opinion, so people can form their own opinions and can get some basic level of education. Because even if we just say we need to get rid of the traffic light system because that's not healthy food, that just because it's green on that doesn't mean it's healthy food. And I think there's a lot of push towards a black hexagon on food, which is what they have in South America, where if it has a black hexagon, it's like a warning sign on the front, that means it can potentially be harmful to your health. So they do that a lot in, I think Brazil are doing that, and other countries, Chile as well, I think are doing it. So a kind of warning system like they used to have on cigarettes is what I would suggest. But the problem is, you'd said there about comfort foods, and I think when people think of ultra-processed foods, the thing that pops into your mind is like processed snacks, savoury snacks, treats, sweets, stuff like that. But that's not the biggest problem for me. The biggest problem is the covert ultra-processed foods. So the stuff that they stick in when you're not expecting. So when the companies, you'll have like, I seen a soup in work, which was a healthy, homemade, freshly prepared on site. And it's advertised there. So all the people, this is in the hospital canteen. So people walking past, visiting the relatives, they look and they say, I'm in a hospital. So you associate it with health. You're walking past the canteen and they're telling you that this is a healthy soup. You look at the ingredients, there's about 25, it was a lentil soup. There's about 25 different ingredients in it. So it's the covert poisoning and of the food that I think is the biggest problem for me personally, because I think there's already that education and that knowledge about we shouldn't eat sweets all the time or treats all the time because they're bad for you. But I don't think there's the same level of education as we shouldn't eat that pre-prepared meal from Tesco's because it can cause cancer or dementia. I don't think there's that level of understanding, and that's what I'd like to...
Yeah, so I'd say to people, you could say educate yourself, but just like you're saying, Lee, it's simply just to move away from buying stuff that's processed, anything that's put together generally in a factory, and move on to a bit like our grandparents' generation, where you went from shop to shop to shop, you bought the ingredients, you put it together, no MSG and all these kind of additives. And I just say on the addiction side, start today. And yes, in my experience, you will fall backwards, you will lapse, you'll relapse, and then you just go again. And when you go again, you learn a little bit more, you get a bit happier in yourself because you physically see, I mean, I hate to say it, but weight loss is a big big motivator for a lot of people. But you get happier, and that's the main thing. And you get to stay around your children for many, many, many more years and you know, dip out gracefully. And it's really worth going for. And if you're struggling, well, there's all sorts of organizations now that recognize that eating is can be an addiction for many people, no different to alcohol, substance use, sex, shopping, can be addicted to pretty much anything if it creates an unhealthy behavioral pattern.
I was going to add that in then, actually, about so I've had issues with alcohol in the past as well, I think, as probably my ex-soldiers do, about just basically about bad habits. So I got into bad habits from a young age. I was drinking a lot from a young age, and it kind of just stayed with me. And I got to the point where I was a functioning social alcoholic, probably, where I was completely dependent on alcohol on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But I could stay off it through the week. But it was never, at occasion, well, I'm lying there, because I would go out and have a few bevvies on a Wednesday for like quizzes or football and stuff like that. But you're never getting it out of your system. You've got your Friday night, bang, you're on it. Saturday all day, Saturday, Sunday, hungover, you have a 6 pints with your roast. Then you're hungover Monday, you're psychologically not right on the Tuesday, you're back on it Wednesday, hungover Thursday, and then you're back on the ale Friday. So I was kind of in that loop as well. And I didn't like the person I was turning into when I was well. I think I could be quite aggressive from past experiences, growing up in quite a rough area, being involved in gangs and then joining the forces from a young age. And being taught as an infantry person to, obviously, they want to brutalise you because they want you to react when you need to react, don't they? They want you to be aggressive when you need to be aggressive. So I think we all have that in us, people who've been in the military, definitely, and people from them kind of environments where we were brought up. So I think that my brother stopped drinking. My brother had used with alcohol and died and fell off a lot. And then it was my brother that opened my eyes, and he put me onto, I don't know whether you've ever come across Rational Recovery by Jack Timpley, I think it is.
No, I've not. Sounds like a good read.
So it is. It's like, so this is, it is relevant. Well, I know I'm rambling going on else, but it's coming back. Sorry. So basically, starting this, I started looking at food the same way that I look at alcohol. So this Rational Recovery teaches you to look at alcohol like the beast within. So when you look at it from an anatomical point of view of the brain, you've got that kind of what they call a primal brain, the lizard brain they used to call it, which is basic instinct. It's just basically reproduce, breathe, fight, run. That's that kind of stuff. Then around that, you've got your mammalian brain, which is basically, again, that's the drive for sex, to use what you'd expect a chimpanzee to have. That's similar. And then around that, you've got our supercomputer, which we've got, which regulates and modifies our kind of higher functions. So the alcohol, the drive for alcohol comes from the mammalian brain, a little bit of the lizard brain and a little bit of the mammalian brain, but it's giving you that. I think people who drink a lot, or people who've had experiences in the past that have kind of predisposed them to these mental health issues, they don't have that same level of regulation on the frontal cortex. So that supercomputer doesn't regulate as well as what it would in other people. It might not be as well formed. Maybe early traumatic experiences kind of deregulate parts of it or stop it from forming how it should form. And I think that if you read this Rational Recovery book, he talks about it being a primal age. And once you once you recognize that it's not an illness, it's not you, you haven't got cancer. It's not an illness, a sickness to be addicted to. It's basically a choice. And it's your deeper part, your more ancient part of your brain that wants to seek that pleasure. And it doesn't have the regulation of stopping you from doing it. So you're basically, you're pleasuring, you're seeking out pleasure. And if you can control that and recognize that that's what it is, you can theoretically stop drinking, because every time you want to drink, you say, okay, the reason I'm stopping drinking is because I don't like the person I'm turning into, and aggressive. I'm hungover on the weekends. I don't spend the time with my family that I should. I don't give my daughter the level of attention that I should be giving my daughter. I'm wrecking my body. I'm unfit. I'm not in the right place mentally. I'm not doing well in work because of it. So there's loads of reasons that you identify, and then you say, okay, so that's the reason I want to give up. So what I'm going to do about it, I'm going to remove myself from that situation, but I can't stop. I can't stop socializing because it's unrealistic. So you've got to find different ways. So it's putting the onus back on yourself. You're recognizing, you're educating where it's coming from, and you're realizing that that's the problem, and it's you that's causing the problem to yourself. And I look at food the exact same way. I think food is the exact same addiction as drugs, sex, alcohol, everything else. It's just an addiction. And I think as a society, we're addicted to food because we're secretly spiked with food, with chemicals in food from a very young age. So we don't stand a chance, especially now, these kids now who are coming up in schools, they're like 80% UPF diet. You've got 33% obesity levels in working class areas by the end of junior school. They haven't got a chance, these kids. They really haven't got a chance because they're being covertly spiked with these toxins and that are predisposing them to obesity. They've got poor education at home where the parents don't understand it, so they're not going to understand it. So it's all addiction for me. I see it as the same. Food addiction is the same as any other. And I think we can battle food addiction the same way we can battle any other addiction. Education, and then basically realizing the harm, trying to realize that you don't want to do the harm to yourself and negating that kind of harm. So that's what kind of where I see it from. That's where I'm. It's always developing with me because I'm quite early in my journey, and that's why I like watching stuff that you do and listening to what you do as well and other people out there, because I'm quite new to this myself. I've only been on this journey a relatively short time. So it's good to listen to other voices and to get the benefits of your knowledge. You've been doing it for 20 years, did you say before?
Well, I've been alkaline or pH neutral for 24 years, never been sick in that time. So you can imagine my views on the last 3 years. You know, I just tell people, everything comes from within. All your answers in life come from within. You know, I read any scriptures, it's all any Eastern philosophy, it's all going to, it comes from within. Once you start blaming other people for your health,
yeah.
And I know it's so difficult for people to get this because, you know, for example, their son comes round to visit and he's a bit, you know, like this. And the next day they're like, and they say, oh, we've got it as well. Yeah, we got it off Davey. Life's not that simple. It's not that simple. And there are other reasons why one human can, almost like you could think of it as empathic illness or sympathetic, that we lived in caves for probably millions upon millions of years, living in the forest, in tribes, in packs. And if one person become the weak link because they'd been getting over acidic, because they've been eating all the honeybee nests or something, or they'd eaten a food group that was toxic, some wrong mushroom. The nature's so clever, it recognises that if Stig is ill, if Stig has poisoned himself, it's likely the rest of the pack has. And something clever within the DNA can signal between people without them even knowing it, and suddenly everyone's detoxing this because if you didn't, your cells would die because you can't have acidic cells, you can't have toxic cells because they can't communicate with each other because your body's like a big electromagnet, like a big dynamo, and your heart pumps ionized blood around a system just like a dynamo, just like when you spin a dynamo, it spins like a wiring loom, like metal, around and creates magnetic current, and that current is what your brain uses to talk, your cells use to talk to themselves. And so you can only muck with your body for so long before your cells are struggling to communicate. And if you can imagine, if your DNA can't communicate to a cell how it's supposed to reproduce, guess what you're heading for? You're heading for malignant cells because they don't know. And like you said, Lee, if I had this chat with my GP, she'd think I was mental. Right? They would have no clue what you and I have been talking about, because they come from a very institutionalized form of education that's massively controlled by the big interest groups that fund the university research and say, look, we want your research to, you know, back up the hypothesis that there's a bogeyman that can jump from one person into another person. If you can do us that research. We'll buy you a laboratory and we'll fund all your staff and we'll give you letters after your name. Oh, I think I can do that. I'll ignore these results, which kind of cloud the evidence, and I'll give you the results which fit the bill. And
starting with COVID, a lot of the research for COVID was influenced by the pharmaceutical industry, wasn't it? But just picking up on a point you've just said then about going to your GP, I had an interesting conversation with my wife the other day about a lady in who she works with, she's young and massively obese, and she's got diabetes. She's a new diabetic. So she went to see the diabetes practice nurse, and the advice the diabetes practice nurse gave her was to not eat as much fruit and veg, because there's a lot of sugars in fruit and veg, so don't eat fruit and veg. So eat more diet food, like diet yogurts, diet drinks. She can drink Coke, it's Coke Zero. So the actual basic information, it's insane. They're giving you the perfect wrong information. If you wanted to give the perfectly bad information, it's that information that you'd give. Don't eat healthy, natural foods. Eat highly processed, artificial crap to get rid of your diabetes, which is going to make the situation 1,000 times worse. And that's where you see people going to like Weight Watchers, because most people have their idea of health and a healthy weight or a healthy diet nowadays from the likes of Slimmer's World and Weight Watchers. And if you look at the advice that they give you, like with the free days and stuff like that, and you can eat as much sugar-free rubbish as you want, the basic information that people get on everything is majorly flawed. Like I used to say to people about COVID, and whatever people's opinions are on COVID, I would say, just no matter what your opinion is on COVID, just consider this thing I'm going to say now. The elephant in the room about COVID is not the fact that there's supposedly this virus or whatever going around, or the fact that there's this deadly virus that's killing people, or the fact that doing anything. The real elephant in the room, and the real question, the real thing that we have to address is, we did have young people, relatively young people, that were dying at that time because they were so obese. And it's, how have we got to a situation where our young people are dying because they're so fat? How have we allowed that? That's the question. That's what we need to be addressing. Never mind anything else. That's the elephant in the room for me. And that's what the whole of COVID, I couldn't get that out of me. Like, why are people not asking this basic question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lee, listen, you've been an absolutely incredible guest. Just bear with me a moment while I do a bit of self-promotion, because I'm a one-man band here, folks. If you want to support me, you might consider checking out my books, all available on Amazon. You'll find a link below. They're all my memoirs, folks, from chronic addiction and madness to running the length of the country, 36 ultra marathons a day to raise awareness of the veteran suicide problem. If you could please subscribe, that would be wonderful, because we got great chats on this show. If you want to support us further, you can join our Patreon or our locals, or just become a channel member for as little as $1.99 a month. You can then join our monthly Zoom chats where we have a bit of friendship and family and we discuss things. You get free VIP tickets to all of my events, so like our bushcraft that's coming up, our Christmas get together, etc., etc., and a lot of other stuff. And the last thing I want to say is thank you to everyone who supported my ocean row. I'm going to row across the Atlantic in December with a team of former fighting men, commandos, all of us, though in reality we've all battled to overcome chronic trauma to live in paradise. And we want to say, if you're out there, if you're struggling with your mental health, we've all been there and we understand, and you're just one step away from stepping into paradise, folks. So stay tuned to our social media. You can see there, look, at Oceans Elite Row is all of our social media. If you can drop us a fiver, folks, to help us on our way, we're raising money for bereaved service kids who more often than not these days they've lost a parent to suicide, unfortunately, or to rehouse veterans. And the charity Elabore, they actually housed a mate of mine the other day, and it was just incredible, incredible to see. Lee, we're going to put a link for your YouTube below this video so people can come over there, check out your stuff and find you. Be great to have you back on the show at some point, because I've really enjoyed this chat. And yes, take care. Massive love to everyone.
Thank you very much for that, Chris. I really appreciate your time, and this is my first ever time on a interview situation, so I really appreciate it. Thank you very much,
mate.
And good luck with everything.
Stay on the Zoom. You're a natural.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.